Hello and welcome to North Coast Church. Today, Pastor Mike Hodson is bringing a teaching to you. So open up your Bibles and listen in.
After an intro video, you got to do something cool, right? I've never had an intro video before. Hey, if you are sitting here thinking, man, Thanksgiving was rough, that doesn't look like Chris or Larry. Who is that guy? Hi, I'm Mike. Nice to meet you. Hey, I'm one of the high school pastors here at North Coast Church. Normally, I am in the back over there hanging out with some 9th and 10th graders. But I get an opportunity to come and hang out with you adults. So, this is what I want to do. I want you to raise my maturity a bit because, you know, hey, I'm a student guy. And just kind of lessen your maturity a bit because, hey, I'm a student guy. We're going to have an awesome, awesome time. Good Thanksgiving? Yes, plenty to be thankful for. Thanksgiving has always been a huge staple at the Hodson House. Anytime you can celebrate with food, it's a good thing. But growing up, the Hodson Thanksgiving was the holiday. For my dad, it was, it is, and it will probably always be his favorite holiday. Christmas is great. Halloween's fun. 4th of July is amazing. But the Hodsons celebrated big on Thanksgiving. It was a time where all the cousins came together, all the family got together and laughed. It was a time full of just laughter and cheer and celebration and food. Lots and lots and lots of food. You might not believe me when I say this, but I'm one of the smaller kids in my family. So anytime food was involved, that was a reason to celebrate. But if you're like me, you probably have some amazing holiday memories and maybe some not-so-amazing holiday memories. One that really just stands out, that when I think of Thanksgiving, this one really jumps to the front of my memory, is 2001, Thanksgiving. I'm 24 years old. I'm living on my own and just kind of doing my thing. I'm a youth pastor up in the Bay Area and just having a blast. I have been surviving on anything that you can order by number, drive through, or heat up in a microwave. And so Thanksgiving was like, all right, good food, good times with family, but mostly good food. A couple days before the holiday, my mom calls and says, Mike, there's some really bad news. We need to leave immediately and leave to visit some family, kind of an emergency situation, so there will be no Thanksgiving this year. So I thought, okay, well, did you just leave the food in the fridge? Is it already cooked? Or what? You're out, but that doesn't mean I'm not there. And she said, no, we haven't done anything, so you're on your own. We'll see you when we get back. And so again, I'm on my own. I do not cook. I microwave pretty well, and I order like a champ, but that's about as good as I got. And so with my plans just gone, I wasn't sure exactly what you do. How do you just kind of call and invite yourself to somebody else's Thanksgiving? You're like, hey, what are your plans? Oh, that's great. See you then. You're like, oh, no, you can't do that. I did think if you just found that family in the neighborhood, everybody has the family neighborhood with the really huge celebration for anything, that if you could just kind of sneak in, you know, one person would think you're friends of one guest and that guest would think you're friends of that guest. So you could kind of make your whole way through the party and eat well with nobody knowing. But I didn't think that would be okay, so I ended up the same place millions of people end up at each year. It's not a place you ever plan on going, it's the place you find yourself. And I celebrated Thanksgiving at Denny's. Pretty good spot. Oh, sad. No, I got no complaints. I got to order it my way. It was cooked my way. It was awesome. I celebrated with a nice little turkey sandwich, and my only company was a waitress that I swear hated me. She held me personally responsible for her having to work on Thanksgiving. Like, hey, your door is open. I'm just here. It was funny because as I sat there, you know, celebrating in my own little way, it just felt wrong, you know. It just felt like there should be something different. Now, it was the same holiday. It had the same meaning. I had the same things to look back and say thank you for. I mean, it was the same stuff, but it just didn't feel the same. I don't know if you've ever found yourself in that spot where you just feel like, you know, this just doesn't seem right. It's kind of unsettled. It's that annoying, like, this just isn't the way I think it should be. Now, it's not just holidays. I'm sure you might have felt that way with relationships, with health, with finances, with jobs, you name it. All of us kind of find ourselves in times of this unsettled, like, how do I do this? What do I do next? Kind of, how do I respond? And it was one of those things that it's not always a bad thing because that can really cause you to do some new things in life and really explore and discover some great things. But it can also be one of those things that can lead us to do some dumb things that just explode in our face. And if we're honest, there are times that the longer we go with Jesus, the more we find ourselves in those spots, right? Hey, we've read our Bible, we've done our prayer, we've gone to church, we've done these different things, but we still feel like, I'm not sure if this is how it should fit. I don't know if this is how it should be. We have these different expectations, these different things and feelings and responses, thinking, really, is this it? Shouldn't there be something else? And if we're honest, it's those times that can cause us to do some really deep searching, or it can cause us to say, hey, well, I'm just going to hit coast and keep going. Like I said, it's not a bad spot to be, but how we respond in that time can be huge, hugely beneficial. It can cause you to discover new things about God, new things about yourself, new things about your faith, really kind of discover some great things. But it can also be one of those things that just explode and the consequences ripple through life for quite some time. Today we're going to look at a story that should be a huge, huge story of thanksgiving, of response to God, but it really ends up being more of a story of, well, not. We'll just leave it at that and we're going to jump in. If you got your Bibles, open them up. We are in Genesis chapter 12. We're going to start in verse 10. If you're new to the Bible, totally cool. Open that thing up. It's the first book, so just a couple pages in. If you don't have a Bible, share with somebody next to you. If you still can't find it, hey, just take the person's Bible next to you. They did all the hard work. It's already open. You're good. As you're kind of flipping pages, let me kind of set this up. The first kind of area there on your page is a great promise, because this story starts with an amazing promise. If you were with us last week, Chris introduced us to this guy named Abram, and it's a story that just has so much promise in it. Abram's just a normal guy. He's kind of a nomad. He's kind of moving around a lot. He doesn't really have anything to call his own to kind of say, hey, check me out. He doesn't have land where he could say, hey, look, I'm well-known because of my house. He doesn't have a whole lot of livestock or wealth or anything like that. He doesn't have a big family. He has a wife that he loves, but no kids. And so there's nothing to say, hey, that's my legacy. He's just your average guy and just kind of in this spot of, okay, whatever. But God shows up and says, Abram, if you are willing to leave everything you know and willing to commit to me and follow me, I will bless you beyond your wildest dreams. He says, look, I will give you great land. I will give you great people. I will give you a great legacy. I will make your name great. I will take all these things and desires and wishes that you want, and I will work in your life and do these things if you're willing to follow and go. And he says, great, I'm in. I'm going. And so with that, he picks up everything he knows and he heads out. And you kind of hear the story about just time and time and time again, he stops and kind of worships God, and he picks up people along the way and on and on and on. And he says, look, I'm going to send you to this land. And he says, great. And he shows up in the land. And he goes from this moment of great promise to, well, kind of a big problem. And so we see how he responds, because sometimes on our way to do great things, well, we trip, we fall, and we do some pretty dumb things along the way. So that's where we're kind of starting off at. A big problem, starting in Genesis 12, 10. It says, now there was a famine in the land. Problem. I'd say it's a pretty big problem. He shows up. He says, okay, I'm leaving everything I know. I'm walking along. I'm telling everybody about this God I met. I'm telling everybody about this amazing call that I have. And we show up to this promised land. And instantly, it doesn't look the way it should. Or so I think. I can only imagine the thought process was going through everybody's head as they're walking for days, weeks, however long, and they're going and going and going and going and going, and they kind of walk through one territory, through one land, think, man, this is awesome, this is beautiful, this would be great to farm, this would be great to kind of have some livestock, this would be a great place to build a house. But if this is just what we're passing through, imagine what it looks like when we get to where God called us. This is going to be amazing. And they show up, and there's famine. And I'm sure that when he showed up, there's a little bit of nerves, and he says, huh, am I sure this is where God wanted me to go? There's that little kind of unsettledness. And then I'm sure there's probably a conversation with the wife, which says, really, are you sure this is it? Is this where we're supposed to go? And then there's the other people talking, saying, hey, we followed you here. Are you sure you heard from God? And then at some point, their problem starts to become this nerve, this unsettled, that feeling of, well, what do we do if it doesn't look the way we thought it should? If it doesn't feel like we thought it would be? If our expectations just don't add up, what do we do? And so he has a plan. Not a very good plan. It says, now there's a famine in the land, And Abram went down to Egypt to live there for a while because the famine was severe. So he shows up. God leads him to a place. Says, okay, here is your land. You are ready. And he says, ooh, there's nothing to eat. Let's go get something to eat. Now, at first glance, it's pretty normal, right? If you go home, there's nothing in the fridge. You go pick up something to eat. But the thing that looks a lot different, depending on the context we look at, is where he ends up going. See, he goes to Egypt, and almost every time Egypt is mentioned in the Bible, it's not a good thing. It's not a place of blessing. It's not a place of God. In fact, it's known for its godlessness, and it's just wild, wild lifestyle. And it's a place that nobody really goes saying, hey, I'm going to go do some godly things there. It's a pretty bad spot. Not only that, the original author of this book, Moses, is writing this history to a group of people who just escaped slavery in Egypt. So this is their first, their forefather, their superhero, their guy's like, man, Abram's awesome, he's going to be great. And then he goes to Egypt, and everyone's sitting there going, really? Why would he go to the place of bondage, of captivity, of so much nasty sin? Okay, let me put it this way. It'd be like if Larry shows up, says, guys, this is kind of good, but it just doesn't have everything we're looking for. Why don't we go somewhere else? And not just somewhere else, we're going to go somewhere godless and sinful and just a place where, you know, nothing good can happen, a place of just desperation and grossness. How about we go to, I don't know, somewhere like Hemet? Nothing good there. And all of us look at Larry and go, really? We're going to go there? I mean, come on. I mean, we love Hemet. We love our friends from Hemet. Hemet is a great place to drive through. Not really to stay, but just drive through. Hey, I'm from Hemet. It's a great place. I love it. It's one of those spots, though. I mean, all joking aside, Egypt is one of those spots that you never think, hey, this is where we're going to go to get blessed, to be taken care of. So everybody's looking at this guy going, really, we're going to go to Egypt? But he knows there's a whole lot of food down in Egypt. There's a whole lot of wealth down in Egypt. We can be taken care of in Egypt. You ever found yourself in a spot where you're doing everything you think is right? Thinking, okay, God, I'm following you. I'm making wise choices. I'm trying to do the right thing. But still, I find my place in almost this personal spot of famine. God, I've trusted you with my morality, my sexuality, my finances, my relationship, everything you've called me to give to you and trust you in, I'm trusting you. But still, this does not work. I'm still in a spot where I need more, where the bills aren't getting paid, where the relationships are frayed, where things with the family is just breaking down, where job looks miserable right now. God, I'm trusting you, but still I feel like a spot of famine. This is where he finds himself, and so he goes to a place where he thinks can be a quick fix. Let's see what happens. Verse 11. As he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife, Sarah, I know you are a beautiful woman. Aw, not that nice. Single men, take a note. Compliment some ladies. You might not be so single. Good stuff. Married men, keep complimenting your wife. It's a good thing. And only your wife. Stay away from the other ones. But this is about the only relationship advice we're ever going to take from Abram. Because right after this, oh, baby, you're beautiful. Let me see how he follows it up. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but will let you live. Say you are my sister so that I will be treated well for your sake. And my life will be spared because of you. So he realizes, man, we've heard some reputation about Egypt. We've heard about this Pharaoh. He wants every attractive woman to be his. So baby, you are beautiful, but when we show up in town, I know instantly they're going to notice you. And right after that, man, they're going to come after me because, hey, we want this beautiful woman to be Pharaoh's wife, but this guy's already married to her, so let's knock him off, get him out of the picture. Then Pharaoh marries this woman, everything's set. So babe, for you, not for me, for you, I want you to lie and then go marry this Pharaoh. How would that work, gentlemen? I would be dead before the sentence came out of my mouth. I wouldn't have to worry about Pharaoh. He says, look, if you tell this lie, and it's only a half lie, it's just kind of a small lie, it's kind of a small truth. A couple pages over, we're going to learn that Sarah and Abram are actually half brother and sister. They share the same father, but different moms. So he's like, hey, well, let's not really tell them that I'm married. Let's tell them that we're brother and sister. That'll be okay. Because then, if you get married off to Pharaoh, then I'll be blessed and I'll be taken care of for you. And it's one of those things thinking, really? This was your best plan? What happened to this confidence that he had when he walked away from everything he knew? What happened to this spot where he said, man, this is going to be great? He had the promise, you know, I will bless whoever blesses you. I will curse whoever curses you. Where did that confidence go? Not only that, if he knew this was going to happen, why would you go to Egypt in the first place? I'm sure there's got to be some smaller towns around there. Or why not, you know, just, babe, don't do your hair for a while. We're going to rub some camel manure on you. You are going to be gross. Nobody's going to want to hang out with you. Why didn't he come up with some sort of plan B or C? No, but he goes, hey, you know what? This is going to happen, so let's go. Let's work out our plan. I don't know why he does it. Maybe if you would have had that confidence in the first place, saying, hey, I know God is taking care of us, there wouldn't be this story. But we see how he responds, says, you know what? Let's kind of go tell this little white lie, this half-truth, and see how this pans out. Verse 14. When Abram came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw that she was a very beautiful woman. And when Pharaoh's officers saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and she was taken into his palace. He treated Abram well for her sake, and Abram acquired sheep and cattle, male and female donkeys, manservants and maidservants, and camels. That's a crazy, crazy setup. He goes into a place and says, hey, look, I know that this can end really bad. I can end up dying. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell a lie. And babe, you're going to perpetuate this lie. And with that, I'm going to be taken care of. Does that just seem crazy to you? Here's a guy that tells a lie and it looks like everything pays off. You know, sure, he lost his wife, but he's probably sitting somewhere in his little tent thinking, man, I got more money, I got more finances, I got more servants, I got more, I mean, you name it, he is being taken care of. Not only that, but he is now known as the brother of Pharaoh's wife. And so everybody in town's like, hey, what's up? So he has just gained this status, all by selling away his spouse. And the crazy thing is, he's looking at it and he's probably having great days and hanging out. We're not sure how long this is going on, but he has those moments where everything seems like, hey, this worked out. Not so bad. You ever find yourself in that moment where you're like, you know what? I probably shouldn't do these things. I know what God tells me to do, but since things are just feeling a little unsettled, I'm going to take control of this and I'm going to try to make these choices. And instantly you start making these little compromises that maybe turn into bigger compromises. And we find ourselves in that spot where we're thinking, this worked out. I didn't get caught. Maybe God was wrong. Maybe I can trust him in these areas of my life, but maybe over here I'll kind of do this myself. And we think there's no consequences. We think that everything's fine. I've tested consequences my whole life, and I'm sure you have too, where it's like, I think I can get away with this. I think this is going to be okay. And we find ourselves in a spot where maybe we got away with it. One of the biggest consequences that just comes to my mind over and over and over again was from my mom. I was 12 years old, and my mom just had this big fear of me starting to smoke cigarettes. Some of the other guys in the neighborhood started, and so she would tell me all the time, if you smoke cigarettes, you're going to get sick and you're going to die. That's it. And so I started thinking, man, why do they sell cigarettes if everyone's just going to drop dead? This is crazy. And so I remember having that fear in the back of my head for years. One day, one of the guys in the neighborhood shows up and we're all hanging out and he goes, hey, look what I got. And he pulls out the first pack of cigarettes I've ever seen. And he says, hey, I stole these from my dad. We're going to smoke. This is going to be awesome. We're going to be so cool. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, we're all going to die. And so my logic kicks in where I'm thinking, well, if we smoke, we're dead. But if I don't smoke, then I'm a chicken, and there's nothing worse than being a chicken in front of your friends. If I would have thought about it, I could have not smoked. They would have all dropped dead, and no one would know I'm a chicken. But at 12, you're like, okay, man, I'm in. At least we're going down together. All right. And so he lights a cigarette. We pass around. We all kind of have a couple puffs, and we're like, oh, I'm not sick. Okay. Maybe the sickness kicks in a little bit. So all day I'm wondering, when am I getting sick? When am I getting sick? When am I getting sick? I'm still alive. I'm okay. And then I remember going home and laying in bed thinking, oh my gosh, this is how it works. I'm going to fall asleep and never wake up. I see how this works. Will I wake up the next day? And pretty soon I start thinking, well, mom's wrong. Mom's lying. I smoked. I felt fine. I didn't drop dead. I'm doing good. And so that became one of those secret things that my buddies and I would get together and we'd have cigarettes every now and then. Well, that's cool for a while until a couple days, a couple weeks go by. Another friend shows up. He goes, hey, I found something. This is awesome. I got it from my house. And he produces this little silver tin. And he says, hey, you know, we've smoked tobacco. Now we got to chew tobacco. All right. No problem with cigarettes. Let's do some tobacco. And I was really kind of confused because he opens a can. It smells more like mint and candy than I ever thought a cigarette or a tobacco would smell like. And so just like we saw in pictures and movies and all the cool guys, you know, grabbed a bit and threw it in. We're like, all right, yeah, well, we're cool. We're cowboys now. I don't know. We'll just stand and spit at each other. I don't know. And everything was fine. There were no consequences at all for about 6 minutes. 6.5 minutes, boy. I felt like my whole skin became like electric, and I was like, oh, my gosh. I just start sweating. I swear I turned just pale white. My hands are just wet, and I'm just got the grossest feeling in my stomach, and just my intestines doing backflips, and just, oh, there were consequences. There were consequences for hours all over the place. I'll spare you my consequences. But it hit me. It hit me, man, I should never touch this stuff again. Now, if I even smell it or see it, I still get that kind of gurgle, just, oh, I don't know how you do it. Oh. But for me, I realized, you know what, maybe Mom's right. Maybe there are consequences. Maybe the consequences I see today, or maybe I see them tomorrow or next month or next year. And just like Mom's right sometimes, I guarantee you, God is right every time. And when he says, look, this is how I want you to live, this is what I want you to do, if not, there's going to be consequences, there will be consequences. Now, we could feel like we got away with it, like Abram sitting pretty thinking, hey, I got paid, I'm doing all right. But there's always going to be consequence. Maybe immediate, maybe next month, maybe next year, who knows? Maybe it's not until we die and we're on the other side of eternity looking God in the face and he says, we need to talk. But there will always be consequences. God promised us, if this is what you choose, well, this is what you get. There will be those consequences. Just because it's not in your face right now, don't think you've gotten by, you've skated it. It'll be there. For Abram, it showed up huge. Showed up in a major, major way. Let's jump back. Verse 17. It says, but the Lord inflicted serious disease on Pharaoh and his household. Because of Abram's wife, Sarah. So Pharaoh summoned Abram. What have you done to me? He said. Why didn't you tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her to be my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go. Then Pharaoh gave orders about Abram to his men, and they sent him on his way with his wife and everything he had. We don't know how long it took. We don't know what exactly it looked like, but we know it showed up huge. And pretty soon, the whole Pharaoh household is infected. Everybody's sick. There's this problem. We don't know how he found out that it was Sarah and Abram to cause. Maybe Sarah finally said, man, this looks really bad. I'm going to tell you. Maybe she told some of Pharaoh's other wives, well, actually, I'm married. Maybe it just came to a point where God revealed, hey, this is a lie, and you're kind of caught up in it. We don't know what it looked like, but we know this is bad. Not only that, it's so bad that Abram got kicked out of the country with everything he had. He was not put to death. He wasn't, you know, all the things that Pharaoh gave him taken away. He says, hey, just take your wife, take your stuff, get out. I want nothing to do with you. Just go. Think, wow. Mike, I thought you said there's consequences. What happened? Where are the consequences there? Let me ask you, what do you think that conversation was like as they walked away from Egypt? Babe, have I told you you're beautiful? It's not working this time. How do you think that relationship was strained or broken? A wife knowing that, you know what, to cover your own skin, to make a little bit of profit, you're willing to sell me to a Pharaoh. Now, God can intercede in broken relationships, and he has restored relationships after relationship after relationship. But there was some time, there was some consequences there. Now, we don't know what that looked like, but you got to believe that there was consequence and fallout. What about the consequence to his influence? To the people who had followed him because they heard that, man, Abram is different. He is a stand-up guy. He is following God until it gets rough. Now he's going to tell a lie, and he's going to try to profit from his own, you know, his own bad situation. There's consequence. One of the biggest consequences we're going to look at in a couple weeks
is in a couple chapters, we're going to hear a story about a woman named Hagar. She's an Egyptian maidservant that Abraham ends up hooking up with, and that starts a huge consequence, not only for Abram's family, but for history ever since. Guys, there are consequences. Sometimes it's immediate and you see it. Other times, well, it falls years and years and years later. But there are consequences. And it all kind of starts with that feeling of, this should look different. This should feel different. I thought there was supposed to be something more. And Abram chose the wrong way to deal with that. He thought, okay, well, God has called me into something. It's not what I think it should be. I'm going to take things into my own hand and just kind of take this walk into Egypt. Now, we look at it, and sometimes there's crazy stories in the Bible. We think, that has nothing to do with my life. I would never go to Egypt. I'd never sell my spouse. I'd never do this. You're right. I'm probably willing to bet you wouldn't. But still, it goes back to the heart of the matter where Abram's willing to compromise, to kind of take control in his own hands, in his spiritual and in his physical life, and say, this is what I need to do. And I'm willing to bet all of us have found ourselves in that spot where we're thinking, God, I know right now this is what you've called me to and this is what you've told me to do, but right now I think I'm going to do this myself. We kind of take that steering wheel back into our hands and say, okay, this is what we're going to do. Now, we would never do that in any other facet of our life, but for this, our spiritual life, think, hey, this is okay, I can get away with it. Now, imagine with me, we all win this great vacation, we're heading to Hawaii, we're on this big old airplane, you're thinking, oh, this is great, can't wait to get there. And then turbulence hits. And it hits bad. We're talking where everything's shaking, people are getting ill next to you, the little air-breathing machine has fallen, and you're thinking, okay, we're going down. And at that point, you think, you know what? I've had enough of this. I'm taking off my seatbelt, walking up to the cabin, knocking on the door, going, hey, pilot, out of my way. I'll take it from here. No, not going to work. Let's say you're sick, and the doctors have done all they can, and they say, look, this is what we need to do. We need to operate. It's not a major thing, but if it's not operated, you're going to die. But if we do operate, you're going to be set. He says, okay, great. As he wheels you into the table, as he kind of preps you, gets you ready to go, he says, hey, any final questions? You say, yeah, actually, could you just step aside, leave everything here, I'll take it from here. I got this. I'll perform surgery on myself. Not going to happen. We'd never do it anywhere else, but in our spiritual life, we think that if we compromise a bit, if we take control, if we think that, you know what, since this doesn't match up, this is what I'm going to do, and I'll get what I want. Man. I think we've all been at that spot. I think we've all compromised at times. Like I said, the feeling isn't a bad thing. How you respond to that feeling can be bad. Now, if Abram would have responded saying, all right, God, I'm going to trust you in this, maybe we don't have the story. Maybe there's stories of your own famine in your life. Maybe there's times where you're thinking the promised land isn't exactly what it should be. Maybe you're thinking, you know what, Mike, I am so far in Egypt, there is no way I'm getting out of this place. Well, let's look at a few things that we can learn from his life and his choices that hopefully help us shape up our lives, and maybe we make the right choices. So a couple points that we can learn from Abram's Egyptian vacation. First, fill in the blank. Cutting corners affects others. Cutting corners affects others. By the choices we make, man, it's going to affect everyone else around us. See, Abram says, hey, look, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to tell a lie. Okay, now, wife, now you're going to tell a lie. Okay, now, Pharaoh is going to believe that lie. And now, because of this, everybody that Pharaoh's, you know, in family with, in connection with, is going to get infected with some crazy disease. The guy who's just taken out the laundry, the guy who's just mowing the lawn, the guy has no idea who Abram or Sarah or Pharaoh really are. I'm just here to do my job. They're all infected. They're all messed up because this guy told a lie. How many times in your life have you thought, hey, you know, I'm going to cut some corners, maybe fudge some numbers, maybe kind of do a couple different things just for me, and it comes back not only to bite you, but bite the people around you. Your kids, your spouse, your coworkers, the people that you live next to, the strangers on the street, and on and on and on and on. How we make our decisions at times not only affect us, but strongly affect others. A couple verses I want to look at in the book of Proverbs. If you're in Genesis, flip over a little bit to the right. There's a really, really big book in front of it called Psalms. And we have Proverbs. It's one of my favorite books. When I was a young Christian, somebody told me they're Christian fortune cookies. the little nuggets of truth and wisdom. We are looking for Proverbs 16:25. And this so speaks to not only Abram's mindset, but also our mindset at times when it comes to this choice of, well, how am I going to do this? What am I going to do? Maybe I'll compromise. It says this. Proverbs 16:25. There's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end leads to death. There's a way that we think, hey, if I do this, this is going to turn out good and this is going to be awesome. But in the end, leads to death. Now, I'm not saying the choices you make today, you're going to drop dead. But how many choices have you made that have led to different sorts of death? Death of a relationship. Death of a marriage. Death of a friendship. Death of a job. Death of trust. Death of influence. See, there are these ways that we think, you know what, if I just kind of make my own way, if I kind of do these things, I could get away with it. Never thinking that, wow, what is the outcome on the other side? See, the way we cut corners is going to affect not only us, but others. If you're still in Proverbs, flip over a couple pages to 28, Proverbs 28:13. Proverbs 28:13 says this. He who conceals his sin does not prosper. You know, there are times that we think, hey, we're getting away with it, but there's not going to be prosperity. Maybe in the short term, maybe immediate, but eventually it all comes back. So if you're in that spot where you're thinking, dang it, I'm caught up, I know I've done this, how do I get right? But whoever confesses and renounces them finds mercy. For some of you, maybe you need to go have a conversation. You're like, I kind of cut some corners, we need to talk. Maybe for you, you know that you've kind of cut those corners and that influence, those choices have impacted your kids, your spouse, your friends, your on and on and on and on. The way we cut corners not only affects us, but affects everybody else we come in contact with. As we're making decisions, hopefully we realize this isn't just about us. This is about everybody we come in contact with. Cutting corners affects others. Next one. Don't judge your spirituality by your situation. Don't judge your spirituality by your situation. See, just because good things happen in life doesn't mean God is blessing them. Just because we prosper from some things doesn't mean, hey, this was God's plan or God's will. Abram's a guy. He sells his wife pretty much. He's sitting pretty. He's hanging out. He has all these new things. And he's thinking, hey, doing pretty good. Everybody else in town's looking at him saying, man, this is a guy of influence. But I bet you he is so spiritually bankrupt at the time that he's looking at himself thinking, man, really? I mean, sure, I got paid, but is this really what it should be like? Just because you have something doesn't mean that you're good with God. And just because you don't have something doesn't mean God isn't good with you and you're not good with Him. How many times have you tried following God, doing the right thing, praying, worshiping, all the things you're thinking, this is what brings me close to God. And then you wake up in the morning, try to start your car, and that thing doesn't start. Or you get to work late and it's just like one thing after another, after another, after another. It's not going well. Just because we love God doesn't mean everything's going to turn out great for us. And how many times you met friends or family members or coworkers that, I mean, they mock God, have nothing to do with God, and yet it seems their life is going great. Just because you follow God, just because you're invested in God, doesn't mean that we're all going to be happy, wealthy, great relationships, full head of hair and all that stuff. I love Jesus, and this is never coming back, no matter what I do. And just because somebody else doesn't believe in God or doesn't have hope in God doesn't mean they're going to be destitute, homeless, sick, and just broken. They might have an okay life. But eventually, there's going to be a time where we all kind of stand and say, okay, God will judge where we're at with Him, not our stuff. Two of my favorite stories in the Bible. One is kind of an obscure, small, one-chapter book or story. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 25. It's not on your note sheet, so you might want to write it down and read it later this week. It's a great, small story. It's a story of a guy named Nabal, which means fool. It actually says, hey, this guy's name means fool. So I don't know what his parents were thinking. We're like, oh, this kid. Yeah, we'll just call him fool for the rest of his life. Nabal is a rich man. He has more stuff than he can ever use in his own lifetime. And at the time when David is kind of on the run out looking for help, he knows that this rich guy is in the kind of proximity of him. So he sends some guy saying, hey, will you help us out? And this is what we'll do for you in return. But Nabal, being just a rich fool, he says, no, I don't know who you are. I want nothing to do with you. I'm not going to help you at all. And he tries to hoard all of his wealth, all of his food, all of his finances, everything. And he thinks, this is great. This is a man who thinks is blessed. But it says that, you know, he actually becomes like a stone. He has a heart attack, and eventually in the next couple of days, he ends up dying. And then all that wealth, all that prosperity means nothing. Here's a guy that has everything but does not know God, that does not respond to God, that does not help anybody else. And hey, I'm not going to say he was good spiritually. He had nothing to do with the Lord. And yet the other story is Job. You guys might have heard of it. It's a guy who has everything, who is blessed. He has family, he has wealth, he has livestock. I mean, you name it, he has it. And eventually that's all taken away, and one by one by one by one, talk about a bad turn of events. And he's left only with his relationship with God. See, what we have doesn't determine how blessed we are. We are blessed because who we belong to and the relationship we have with our God. We can be broke and destitute and heartbroken and just thinking, man, this is not how it turned out. This is not what my plan was. And we could be exactly where God wants us. And we could be rich, affluent, and just have everything we ever thought we desired and be so far from God. Just because we are in a good situation doesn't mean we're spiritually right with God. And just because we're spiritually right with God doesn't mean everything is going to go our way. Guys, Abram had almost everything he needed, but at the same time, he walked away from that because he wanted some, well, he wanted some food, and some money, and some comfort. Don't judge your spirituality by your situation. Next one. God's plan will get done with or without us. God's plan will get done with or without us. It's kind of a crazy story, this story of Abram. Do you realize why Abram didn't get killed in Egypt? Do you realize why Sarah didn't get pregnant in Pharaoh's house? Because God showed up and said, no, this isn't happening. See, God had a plan and he had a promise and he had purpose. And even though Abram went in and completely blew that plan up, God said, no, I have a plan for you and this is how this is going to respond. And so with that, God shows up and does some amazing things in a real crazy situation. See, God has plans for all of us in life. And he says, look, I have things that I want you to do. I've given you a purpose. I've given you opportunity. I've given you life. And all you got to do is respond to me. But sometimes you think, well, hey, God's going to do this anyway or without me. So I'm just going to live like hell and still kind of do my own thing and kind of end up being blessed at the end. But it doesn't work that way. God says, hey, look, here's my plan A. And I want you to be a part of plan A. Now, there's a chance that God's plan A will include us, and there's a chance that we can, you know, get ourselves kicked off the team. Here's kind of what I mean. There's a couple quick stories. They're not on your note sheet, but just a couple things you might want to write down. 1 Samuel chapter 2, 32-36. Is a story of a group of priests, a family of priests that God has promised, look, you will serve before me, and all of your family and all your lineage will serve before me. But these priests get so sideways and get so sinful and so nasty, and Dad will not step in and intercede and say, guys, you've got to stop this. The God actually says, sorry, you've disqualified yourselves. I cannot work with you. You are gone, and I'm going to use a different group of people to be my priests. 1 Samuel chapter 10 is the story of a guy named Saul. Saul's a great soldier. He's good looking. He has everything you might want in life. And everybody around him says, you are awesome. We want you to be king. Now, God doesn't want a king, but the people keep saying, God, make him a king, make him a king, make him a king. And so God says, look, well, here's what's going to happen if we make this guy king. They say, we don't care, make him our king. So he says, okay, here's your king. And God actually blesses him and says, okay, you're my king. But then through choices, through actions, he starts doing things his own way, will not celebrate and worship God. He actually ends up doing some witchcraft and some black magic, some crazy things. And eventually God says, okay, that's it. You're disqualified. I cannot have you as my king anymore. Acts chapter 5, there's a story of the young church getting together and everyone's kind of selling their belongings to kind of help each other out, do some great community stuff. And this couple called Ananias and Sapphira, they have this great field and they're going to sell it and they say, hey, look, we're giving all of our money to help the church. And the church says, really? You sold it and gave us all the money? He says, yeah, yeah. He says, you've lied. You've not just lied to us, you've lied to the Holy Spirit. And it says, instantly they dropped dead. And trust me, that's some pretty serious disqualification right there. God couldn't have them doing what they were doing in His community as they were starting to build and grow. And so God completely moves them out. I know you've heard it said here many and many a times that we are God's plan A and there is no plan B. God's plan A will get done with or without us. See, what God has planned for your life, you can opt out and say, I want nothing to do with that. And God will still have His things take care of. But we will miss out on the blessings. We will miss out on the opportunity. We will miss out on what God was doing. If He would have never went to Egypt, man, maybe we never have a story. Maybe He goes to Egypt and completely blows it up, and then we get a story of how Lot became the father of everybody in the future because Abram completely disqualified himself. But God said, no, I have a purpose, I have a plan, I have a promise. This is what we're going to do. May we make decisions that do not disqualify us from what God is doing. I would hate to be on this side of eternity and wake up in front of God and say, Lord, wow, glad I'm here. And He says, you blew it. There was so much more you could have done. Sure, this isn't a salvation issue. We are in. We are saved. But how much can you influence and impact others for God? God has a plan. It's going to happen. Hopefully we're on board. Next thing we learn from looking at the story. God's promises are promises from God. Now we're going to let that sit for a second. Just let that marinate. It's pretty deep stuff. God's promises are promises from God. And I've been thinking, really? This is kind of like Chris's point last week where he said, God's word is God's word. Crazy. Here's the reason why this is so mind-blowing and so true and so powerful that you need to realize this is God's promise. See, we have plenty of promises in our lives, right? People have promised you, hey, I'm going to show up at this time and they never show. Hey, this is going to happen and it never happens. On and on and on. There are different promises that have been said to us or we have said to others and it's just kind of fallen apart. But God's promises are promises from God. And God is all-powerful, ever-changing, or never-changing, everlasting. He is a God that is eternal and powerful. And He says, look, when I promise you something, this will never change. You have my word. If he would have held on to his promises, realizing that if I bless people, God will bless them. If I curse people, God will curse them. I have power. This is great because I am walking with God. This would be a complete different story. There are times in our lives where we look at God and say, God, I don't know if you could provide right here. God, I don't know how I'm going to respond right here. But we need to remember that these promises that God gives us are God's promises. This book, this Bible is full of promise after promise after promise. It's a promise that He will give us life and purpose. It's a promise that our name is written in heaven forever. It's a promise that if we recognize Him here on earth, He will recognize us in heaven. It is a promise that He will just keep our path straight. There are promise after promise after promise. And yet sometimes you just think of it as suggestions. Sometimes you think, I want something more, so I'm going to go do my own thing. One of my favorite promises in the whole Bible is out of Proverbs. It's chapter 3, verse 5 and 6, and it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will keep your path straight. He's saying, look, Mike, when you get confused, when you get frustrated, when you're looking at your life, and you're thinking, this doesn't make sense, that's okay, it's not supposed to make sense. You're supposed to trust in me, and I'll take care of your path. I'll keep you going straight. There are so many times I've leaned on that saying, God, I don't understand what's going on right here, but I understand who you are, so I'm going to lean on you. God, I'm going to hold on to your promise because right now I got nothing else to hold on to. God's promises are promises from God. If Abram would have held firm to those promises, we have no idea how the story would have turned out. We have no idea how this would have been different. Now, the reason why he is blessed and continues is because God promised him. How many things in your life are you thinking, can I trust God in this? God, I would love to hold to your promise. God, will you be here? God promises he will never leave you. He'll never forsake you. He is with you. We just need to hold on to his promise. Last thing we learn from Abram, and this is probably the thing that that I know I'm learning myself. Sometimes looking back is the best way to see God. Sometimes looking back is the place we see God the most. See, the thing with right now is it's right now. It's so immediate. It's so right here. And the thing with the future, it seems so big and undetermined that it's like, how do I get there? But the thing with the past, man, it's the past. And if you're like me, you have a short memory and you're always looking for that next thing. And so you're like, the past, whatever, I'm moving on. If Abram would have stopped and said, look, you know, this is where God spoke to me. And it says in Genesis 12, verse 7, that God revealed himself to him. So twice he has spoken or seen or heard from God. This is amazing. If he would have stopped and said, okay, I remember that this is where God's at. It talks about how as he leaves his land, he sets up altars and prays to God. If he would have realized that God was with me then, God was with me then, God was with me then, he is with me now. This could have been a completely different story of a visit to Egypt. See, sometimes we're so caught up in right now, we're so caught up in what might be, that today gets so twisted and scary and worried. And that feeling sneaks in, that unsettledness I was talking about, that, how do we respond? And we start looking at that thinking, I don't know how I respond to God. I don't know how I'm going to move here. But it's when we stop and we look back, we start to see. Like I said, this is a thing that for the past 12 to 18 months has just been rocking my world. See, I'm a guy who has plans. I'm a guy who thinks every day is like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to achieve. And so my wife and I, a couple years back, said, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to start ourselves a little family. We're going to have some kids. It's going to be awesome. And after a number of years of infertility and then some loss and some, hey, it's almost here. Okay, it's not going to happen. It became one of those moments of many angry, prayerful nights, many a tears, many a times we just looked at each other and said, I don't know what's going on here. And I remember after our final doctor appointment, sitting with my wife and just putting my hands in the air saying, I'm done. That's it. All right. No parents, no plans. We're just going to hang out ourselves. And it was a moment that I completely gave up and said, that's it. And my wife looks across the table and says, I don't know if this is the way it should be. I said, this isn't the way it should be. We should have kids. We should be happy. We should be. She goes, no, you know, we've prayed, but it's always prayed and then we're going to do things our way. And she says to me, Mike, your whole life has been dedicated to helping other people, you know, to investing in kids. You've helped raise hundreds of other people's kids. Mike, our house has been full with our cousins with laughter and just craziness and insanity for years. Mike, we've gone to so many other soccer games and t-ball games and all that with our friends' kids. Mike, you volunteered to be Santa Claus a number of times at different places just because you love hanging out with kids. Mike, just because we're not doing it our way doesn't mean we can't have a family. And it was one of those moments, it was so humbling and so just putting me in my spot thinking, I had never thought of what God's plan for us was. And so the time when I give up, say, okay, that's it, no family, no kids, no nothing. My wife says, look, we are parents that don't have kids, but there are plenty of kids out there that do not have parents. Maybe we should look into this foster and adoption sort of thing and see what we can do to help out others. And it was one of those moments of clarity that I say, dang. And it's just that moment in the sand where stopping and looking back saying, that's where God was, that's where God was, that's where God was. And I can see how God's plan A for the Hodson home has always been this adoption process. But Mike's plan A was, hey, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do. And it's not until I said, okay, God, I see what you've been doing. God, I'm on board. And man, I could tell you, I don't know where this is going to end up yet, but I am so excited to look back in the next 5 to 10 years and say, this is where God showed up. This is where God showed up. This is where God showed up. I don't know where you're at right now, and I don't know how close you are to God or how far you are from God, but I'm willing to bet if you stop and don't look at right now, don't look at this moment, but you turn backwards and see where God has been and say, he was there, he was there, he was there, that he will give you direction on, okay, what comes next. And next week, next month, next year, next 50 years, you will look back and say, that situation that I was in way back when, God, I see where you worked in. Abram never stopped to look back. He kept moving forward. Guys, there's nothing wrong with having a feeling of being unsettled or different expectations. But what could be very, very wrong is how we respond in those. May this be a time where you look at these expectations and your feelings and say, okay, God, what do you have for me? Not what do I want, but may this be a time where you draw near to God and get close to him and say, God, reveal new truth to me. And not be a place where you make decisions that blows up and ripples through your whole family. Say, dang it, I made the wrong decision. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for who you are, and we thank you for how you loved us. Lord, we thank you that you've given us promise and you have given us purpose and you will walk with us through any situation. Lord, right now, as we just come to close us up and praise you, Lord, I ask that you reveal yourself to us. Lord, for some of us, we are close to you, Lord, and we know that the steps are just every step that you give us is what we're going to take. And some of us are completely far from you, thinking, man, how did I end up here? How do I get back? Lord, give us directions to get back. And Lord, for those of us who don't even know if you're true or real, just reveal yourself to us. God, I ask that you lead us this week. We love you, and it's your name we pray. Amen.
So before we close, if you want more information about this teaching or any other teaching, please go online to www.northcoastchurch.com, or you can see us at 2405 North Santa Fe Avenue in Vista, California. Check the website for times of services. And now let's get back to some closing thoughts from Pastor Mike Hodson.
Hey, before you head out, I know there are times you feel like, hey, I'm in my own personal famine and I'm not sure what to do here. The best thing you can do is stop and say, all right, God, where are you at? What do you have for me? I know that we just celebrated Thanksgiving and it's an awesome, awesome holiday, but as Christians, it shouldn't be a one time a year thing. It should be one of those things that we look back on daily. Say, God, thank you for where you have me. Thank you for where you're taking me. Thank you so much for where you got me out of. Before you head out, say hi to someone else who's thankful and celebrating and looking for where God's taking them. Have a great week, and we will see you soon.